Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, Vachon, and listeners around the world. That was our founder, Brian Brown, former writer for Time Magazine, storyteller par excellence, and unapologetic progressive. We strive to meet his standards for conversational exploration of current events and wicked humor. I'm your host today, Lynn Kerrigan, former all-star shortstop, still fielding line drives of the mind, and I'm also engineering. Welcome to our team of analysts, pundits, commentators, and jokesters, minus Bruce Holman, who's off-island today guarding the Lesser Gallery, and minus Truman O'Brien, who was off dealing with his airplane, and we hope he will return next week. Coming to you in our team is from beautiful downtown Vachon is poet, writer, teacher, and fierce feminist, Gail Kellner. And Gail, I want to see what sights you've seen around the Salish Sea and what in the rock has caught your notice.
Well, good morning, everyone. Well, I'm always thrilled at this time of year because we begin to get the spring tides, which reveal large stretches of our island expands by many I'm guessing yards, if not miles, square yards, if not square miles, when the tide goes out. I don't know if anyone's ever done a measurement of that, but I we go from like 39 square miles, I believe, when the tide's in, and be an interesting calculation. Wow. To what it was when the tide's out. So yeah, though, it's lovely to walk down along the water, and things I've been noticing are an increase, and this is lovely to see, an increase in our seabird population this year over last. And I can only speculate what that may be, but one thing I noticed in the fall was that there were none of the trawlers that usually take a large percentage of the fish and small fish, unfortunately, and disrupt some of the ecosystems down that the birds rely on. And so it's possible that that has had a positive impact.
Well, they're all stuck in the Suez Canal, aren't they?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you don't normally hear about the description of king tides on local news with the sun and the moon in alignment and pulling the water. But, you know, when it comes to floating a super tanker off the bottom of the Suez Canal, I guess that's the news you get.
Wow. That was incredible. Thank you, Gail. I'm always appreciative of your astute observations of the natural world. It seems to balance out a lot of the craziness that's going on in the world. You start talking about it and I get calm. Today, I really appreciate that.
You bet. It calms me as well. And I suggest anyone who is ever in a personal or political quandary, take a walk outside.
Absolutely. And let's also welcome our other team member today, political optimist and activist Kevin Jones, whose efforts really helped turn the tide in the last elections. He's already gearing up, I'm sure, for the critical midterms. Kevin, how do you keep going amid such bitter rhetoric and against such overwhelming odds, all bought with the corporate dark money?
Wow, that's a great question, Lynn. You know, it is a challenge, and many people, I think, feel that challenge. I think we have to look back at the successes and the ability to move a progressive agenda. You know, I was listening to a podcast today with Pod Save America and these former White House staffers and speechwriters, and they talked about how do we define our democracy? And is it the politicians in office, or is it the people and their views and how they see what is beneficial in their lives? And they sided definitely with the people. And I think that's clearly the place that it needs to be. And the people want to be supported through this pandemic with the American Rescue Plan. The people want healthcare. The people want economic justice. The people want to have their voice heard and not overrun or silenced by those corporate dark money interests. And so I think it'll be very intriguing to see how this new administration sides with the views of the people who they are guaranteed to represent. That is certainly their focus. And so it's inspiring, I think, in that way for me.
Thank you. I really like that and agree with you on some level. And then I watched all the amazing work in Georgia, you know, by Fair Fight, Stacey Abrams, Get Out the Vote campaigns. And then they turn around at the state legislature level and start passing bills, you know, for increased, quote, voter integrity, which sound an awful lot like poll taxes, you know, and IDs and fewer ballot boxes and things that don't reflect at all, apparently, the will of the people. So how do you come to grips with that? How do you reconcile both of those?
Well, in a couple of different ways. One is a sort of just an analytical approach to, you know, what are the consequences of those? A good friend of mine who's on the conservative side once said, "Don't worry, Kevin, the pendulum in our democracy continues to swing back and forth. Each side will take the pendulum further than the center wants, and the center will bring them back." So that's one sense, is that that pendulum's going to swing back. The other one is that if you look at what happened in Georgia, the things that are headline news are no handing out food and water to people standing in line, which is clearly focused on the African-American and Black community in Atlanta. And other large cities. Clearly, that's not anything that any of us would think is what our democracy stands for. On the other hand, apparently, they did expand some of the time for voting. That's sort of not a real equivalency because I think they took a lot more away than they provided. But, you know, they took away from both Republicans and Democrats. They made voting harder for everybody. And eventually, the courts will have to weigh in. There's already lawsuits, of course. We'll see how those turn out. The people and the corporations in the state of Georgia need to weigh in. And there's already talk now about whether the All-Star Game, which I'm sure you are quite a fan of, whether it should be held in Georgia or not. And the Masters Tournament. And there's two or three others.
Yeah, that corporate now, boycotts. You know, I think people are thinking about hitting Georgia in the pocket. Of maybe not supporting businesses that are in Georgia as long as their legislature is doing that. Gail, do you have any thoughts about all of this? Is there anything you wanted to say?
Well, I do. I think that this is an often quoted thought from Martin Luther King, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it turns towards justice. And I didn't quite get that exactly right, but that's the general gist of it. And I think that that is something in times when we see these kind of things go on, to realize that overall the arch of history is one that's moving towards democracy, towards equality, towards justice. And we have significant little dips and valleys that happen, but generally speaking, if you look at it over the course of thousands, hundreds of years, certainly, and thousands of years, very certainly, you can see that we have moved the ball, and we'll continue.
Well, we'll come back to that in a bit. Kevin, let's hear from you too.
I appreciate that perspective, and I agree with that perspective. Don't get me wrong. It's not like we're sitting on our laurels and waiting for something to happen to right this, what I view as a wrong. You know, we have a lot of opportunities to take action, to let the folks who make these decisions in Georgia and other states, that this isn't what our democracy looks like to us, and that we think that they should have our view of democracy, which is accessible voting, as many people involved in the franchise as we possibly can, within the guidelines that are set up within our Constitution. So we're taking action. We're not happy, we have to deal with the hands, the cards were dealt, and so that's what we're doing.
Thank you. And we'll swing around to some of those bigger questions in just a minute. For now, kind of, let's take a spin through some of your thoughts on some of the local goings on here on Vashon and maybe in the state. I know that for me, I've been particularly thrilled by the recent opening of the Vashon Theater. I went to see Nomadland last Friday night and picked up that rascal Johnny Depp as my date. You know, those cardboard celebrity cutouts are taking up some of the empty seats in that 25% capacity movie house opening. And it was actually Johnny and my second date, because he showed up for the last Oscar celebration that I attended. So we were so much more relaxed with each other. And he even picked up his trash this time.
Nice. Did he attempt to slip his arm around you?
Oh, no, honey. I took that over right away. I'm a forward woman. Me and Johnny were all cozy. How about y'all? What have you been interested in on Vashon these days? Or in the state of Washington local?
Well, I guess I just will say I was glad to see that we were out ahead with our vaccinations above King County, but regardless of that, they have again begun to send vaccines to Vashon. So, I myself am looking forward to an appointment this week to get my first vaccine.
That's right. They opened appointments last night at 7 at the pharmacy. Yeah.
At the pharmacy, right. So I think that there, and from what I understand, that will continue to be the case as we get more and more vaccines available. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's
How about you,
no
Kevin?
Kidding.
You could become one of the 3.4 million or so people a day getting vaccinated in this country, which is pretty amazing, right? That's like 1% of the entire country's population on a daily basis. And they've been able to maintain that for at least, I think, the last 4 days. Anyway, for me, we're always amazed at the range of critters that come to our house because of the bird feeders that we have. And I talked about the barred owls that showed up the other night, I think a week or so ago. Now what we're seeing is the baby hummingbirds.
Aww.
And, the teaspoon size little flyers that are out there coming Aww. By and, being shown by mom and dad how to use the bird feeder. And then, of course, the hummingbird battles for, dominance over the feeder. It's really an awesome time. Springtime on Vashon is a great place to be.
I have to tell you about the barred owls. The last time that my grandson spent the night over at my house, I didn't even know what a barred owl sounded like. And all of a sudden, I'm gonna attempt to mimic a barred owl, because they were like barking and hooting. They were going like, oh, 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 oh. I thought, what kind of demented dog is that out there? And yet it was kind of high, tree level high. And Sam could not go to sleep that night, man. He could not, stay in bed. He just immediately leapt into my bed with me. And he said, I don't want to hear that barred owl anymore. He could say it, but he couldn't stand it, Kev.
All right. The other thing we mentioned a week or so ago is mason bees.
Oh, yeah.
I think we did mention it on the show. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Gerke, who's our mason bee king on Vashon and distributor of mason bees, we picked up dutifully our PVC tubes with the mason bees in them, the cocoons, and we put them in our fridge to keep them dormant. And they're in the vegetable bin.
Oh,
so, Susie was in there grabbing, a carrot or something, and she looks down and here's a mason bee walking around in the bottom of the vegetable bin. And it's like, Kevin. So The tape, the deal is the tubes have caps and there's a hole in the cap so the bees could come out, and there's tape over it to keep them inside. So it probably was good that the tape came off, because we didn't know that the bees were actually getting out of their
cocoons. Ambulatory.
Yeah, so we took all the tubes. There's three tubes, and there's like, I don't know, 70 or 80 cocoons. And each one we emptied out into a dish to see what was going on. And there were like five or six bees that had, you know, partially, three of them had partially chewed their way out, and another two had completely emerged. And so we said, okay, you don't want to hang out in our fridge. We'll put you out. You obviously are you know, early adopters. And so hopefully they're off seeking pollen and creating, you know, all the stuff that the bees do. But yeah, it's great to, you know, see the bees are ready to go.
I love that. And it makes me laugh so hard. It makes me feel like someday we're going to achieve a Car Talk level of humor on this show, where no matter what's happening, we make it funny. So thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that. You know, because all I think about is the federal and sort of existential, you know, kind of heavy duty questions that are swirling around in my head. You know, it's really been a busy week. Not only has spring sprung, but, you know, maskless crowds have flocked to the beaches from KVI to Miami to Rio, and the vaccinated elders, of which I'm one, went back to their board games and early dinners with friends. Thank you, Jim and Cherry. And more doses of vaccine now at the Vashon Pharmacy and CMAR. I just wanted to add, Gail, I heard they got about 250 doses for this week. You know, and I read that Patty Murray is being lauded for her longtime work to support children and to raise them from poverty. And Biden's released his stimulus money to most Americans now and has been releasing details of that $1 trillion investment program in U.S. children's programs and protections for the free press and physical infrastructure, and all without much Republican support. You know, to me, I just start worrying. You know, there's major forces battling for dominance in the world right now. And although you talk about the ARC, and I also benefited from a Native American faculty member named Corinna Walters at the UW School of Social Work, who used to say, with policy, you have to think in the time of trees. Things don't happen immediately. And yet, authoritarians seem to grab power immediately. And then we're dealing with things like, you know, the Myanmar takeover by the military after 6 years of Aung San Suu Kyi's trying to work on democratic reforms. And, you know, seems like the Republicans have just gone to ground in the Senate. And I don't know what it will take to get them unstuck and to help us recover from COVID and from gun violence and other of our issues that need to be dealt with. And Kevin, this was sort of one of your questions as we kind of planned out this this week's show, which was kind of that question of authoritarianism versus democracy. Can you kind of get us started on this one?
Yeah, happy to. The you know, the thing that struck me was watching the president's press conference, and so, you know, Biden is clearly Uncle Joe, right? He has kind of an ambling demeanor, and it shows sometimes of, you know, he's looking at his notes of, well, who's next and where do we go from here. And at one point he was asked by a reporter some really detailed questions about a U.S.-China policy.
Right.
And Biden kind of looks up and he says, you know, those are important topics, but if I just answer those questions, it's really kind of out of context with the way I think about what's going on. Mm. And he paused for a minute and then he comes back and he says, you know, what's going to happen is in the next generation, your children or maybe your grandchildren are going to be writing political science essays about whether the autocracies or the democracies prevailed. That's what's at stake here. And I just thought that, you know, so many people are kind of trying to figure out who this guy is. Not that we don't know Joe Biden, right? But he's now the president and kind of what's on his mind. And how's he going to address policy? And how's he going to address Korea? And all those things that you mentioned, Lynn, how's he going to address them? And I just came away from that comment being very relieved that he is not at all escaped from the big picture. within that context, autocracies do spring up. Myanmar is an example. Hong Kong. Last year, we cited examples of Hong Kong democracy and what's going on in Israel with multiple elections that aren't deterministic and Netanyahu trying to keep his prime ministership and I forget the name at the moment of his challenger. And still now in Israel, they have their fourth election, which is undetermined. So where does democracy stand? Mm-hmm. And clearly since then, we've seen China crack down. And clearly, in my opinion, they're going to win the war of the autocrats, as Bruce Hallman predicted. So, where do we stand? I think it's something that we need to keep contributing to, keep watching. Where do we have hope? And I think we need to raise our voices as well to make sure that while our country could befall those fates, we need to be alert and make sure that doesn't happen.
You know, you said a really important thing to me, which is the part about contributing versus just being a passive news consumer, which I think is sort of deadly. You know, when you're in a democracy, to just watch it like television is not helpful or productive to anybody in any way. And, it's one of the things you do so well and bring us all of those opportunities to do something with. Gail, kind of what's your position, your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that the world is entering a very dangerous time. Primarily, my view is that climate change is going to press this issue really hard, that yeah. Democracy or an some kind of dictatorship of run by several countries. That these are questions that are being have a lot of pressure put on them when we add climate change to that and climate chaos to that. But I also think it's an opportunity. Pressure to like this can also cause us to come together. And so I choose to believe that will be the outcome. I look back and I think, it's easy to think we've always had nations and that this is just like nationhood. The idea of statehood is only several hundred years old. Right. It is a relatively new idea. And I think that it will pass into something new and different, just like feudalism, the rule of kings and queens passed. And I think that each time we as we move forward historically as a race, as a human race, I think that we begin to see our commonalities and the importance of working together. My hope is that some form or another of United Nations is where we eventually come together to create policies that are going to protect and preserve not only ourselves but the Earth itself. And I'm genuinely choose to be hopeful about that and work towards that.
You know, I really appreciate that because I think we have managed to push a lot of these bigger questions back, defer it to our children and our grandchildren. And now with climate change, I think we don't have that luxury anymore. It's here, it's in our faces, and there's a lot of destruction happening. And if we don't deal with it, we will be in deep trouble. And, I look forward to more affordable climate change possibilities, getting those wind turbines up, more efficient solar panels, all of that. We're lucky to live on an island where we have, very good green tech opportunities here and people really trying to get us all on board with what we can each make happen, here on our own island. Rondi Lightmark's whole Vashon catalog, is trying to really highlight all of that. And, I hope it happens fast enough. Myself, I just want a little biodome over Vashon and whatever happens to the rest of the world happens, but I want my biodome here. Kevin, what do you think about the opportunities that are kind of here and now for us about policies that can shore up our bulwarks of democracy, you know? And I'm asking because I noticed just this morning reading the Seattle Times that the Biden administration has finally cut off trade ties with Myanmar, as you know, it's like the equivalent of a sanction of some way. So, you know, it's kind of putting pressure on a country where the pocketbooks are. You know, what other kind of things do you know that are going on that are trying to help, you know, make these things happen that people should know about?
Yeah, well, some of those things I think we are just going to be watching. But bringing the democracies together again is one of the things that this administration and Secretary Blinken is doing. And it's intriguing to me in that the first encounters with the Chinese, for example, have been disruptive. You know, and China is normally, and as I've read in these meetings, you know, very diplomatic and not want to outburst. Well, that is different this time around. So I think what we're seeing is the autocracies feeling really great under the previous administration. Mm-hmm. They can kind of go off and do what they want. And now they hopefully will be held more to account. I don't think that's something that our United States does alone. And I think the bringing the democracies together is something that we can not only watch, but if we can encourage it. You know, we have representatives and senators that we can raise our voices. But I think the more local thing, coming back to the country, is addressing the Senate rule known as the filibuster.
Oh, yes.
And the news just last week is the Spokesman Review, I believe, in Spokane, had carried an article where Senator Murray, first time, I believe, in public, used the word filibuster in conjunction with her commitment to making sure that the things that need to be addressed in this Congress get addressed. Up until now, she says, we will find a way. Now what she's saying is she's using the word, she's talking about the filibuster as part of that path forward. There are a lot of articles showing up in papers around the state asking the senators their positions on this and asking them not only what their position is, but when do they take action? Mm-hmm. Because what we have happening, as you mentioned earlier, is that all of the voter suppression laws going on in states, Georgia, of course, is the headliner, all of those laws can be addressed by passing the We the People Act, which is H.R. 1, is now passed the House, and it is now S.1 in the Senate. But the filibuster stands in the way of getting the necessary votes to pass those laws. Passing those laws is the one thing that will open the door to allowing our democracy to act more as a democracy that's really hearing the voice of the people, as opposed to managed democracy, which is something that President Putin presides over. They have votes, they have candidates. You can't miss the candidates that they don't like, they put in jail, which has just happened recently. You know, you only get the candidates on the docket that were selected by the party in control. That's also true in China. We need to understand that our democracy can look very familiar, but really be unfamiliar in terms of really our voices. So we need to get the filibuster removed or revised. We need to have the We the People Act passed, and we need to do it in time so it can address these voter suppression laws that we hear so much about in the news. So when you contact your senator, ask them not only if, but when.
There you go. Gail, you wanted to add something.
Maybe if we revise the filibuster, we should add something that it can one senator at a time as they're standing there, but they can't be given any food or water.
There you go.
That's great.
I can see that in a letter to the editor.
Yeah, you ought to write that, Gail. That's funny and true, isn't it? You know, Gail, for me, I want to kind of bring this conversation back to sort of the feudalism question, because I've been reading some articles about the filibuster that we're talking about its racial history, that it really began in the time of Henry Clay, and it had to do with the Southern Democrats or whoever it was at the time, you know, really trying to protest the freedom for blacks. And this kind of leads to my other kind of overarching question, that all of this sort of blends together in some way, but the idea about, you know, individual freedoms versus sort of the equality questions, you know, the kind of commonwealth, the idea that everybody should benefit from this democracy. And it makes me remember a book that I read called American Nations by Colin Woodard, that talked about the different settlers as America was being populated, and that the South was really grown from land grants by the king and by lords from both, you know, France and England to work plantations, and how they have a totally different mindset than the settlers from the Massachusetts, you know, Plymouth Bay Colony, maybe even the James, well, yeah, I'll just leave it at Massachusetts, because they were the Puritans and reformers, and they came here really with a moral quest to kind of have a better society for everybody, certainly around religious freedom, than they had back in Europe. And so for me, you know, here we get to these questions, and they're all intermingled about, you know, there are remnants of feudalism, and there are remnants of that feudal racial discrimination, you know, from the South that has perpetuated those filibusters and the arguments of, you know, that even get us into sort of gun control kind of issues, you know, with the settling of the far West that was not really very connected to government anywhere. It was sort of pioneers, and they did their own thing and had their own law and justice, you know, as the West was settled, and now they, you know, don't want to end gun violence at the expense of restrictions on their guns. And so, I, you know, for me, I find it a big Celtic knot, you know, just kind of a fascinating intermingling of ideas and ways to live, you know, in a free country. We all have different ideas about how to live in a free country. And so, Gail, I just kind of wanted to throw that ball back at you in terms of, you know, feudalism and the filibuster and, you know, kind of it's those links to autocracies within America. And we have them within America. What do you think?
I'm going to, that's quite a ball of knots that you threw at me there. Put your pitching glove on, girl. I might throw it back at you. And Kevin, you too. But I would say that, you know, one of the overarching themes that I see playing out is this question between individual freedom and group responsibility, and it's often a tug of war between those two ideas. And I think we can preserve the many aspects of individual freedoms, but we have to do it with consideration to how it affects the group, the many others. And unfortunately, we've lived in a situation where the benefits of individual freedom have gravitated to a few individuals making lots of money, controlling lots of property, and it's been at the expense of workers, of women, of minorities, and so I think balancing that back, so that I would like to see, when we talk about people talk about freedom, I'd like to see the freedom of children and being able to go to school without having to worry that there may be a shooter entering their school and parents really along with them. And that's freedom in my mind. I'd like to see freedom mean that I have an affordable wage so that I can breathe easy when I go to sleep tonight. That's a form of freedom. I think freedom has many, many iterations. And I think that there's been a freedom for a few at the expense of many. And I would like to see that balance changed a little bit and see more responsibility by the few that have fewer that have power, and more more freedoms and rights for those that have been out of power.
Yeah.
So back at you, girl. Here comes the the knot.
Well, it makes
Kevin,
me
don't think you're getting out of this. Well, what do you think, Kevin? Go ahead.
Well, I think that question of individual freedoms. Sorry. The first thought is, let's all grow up. I was going to scratch that out. But you mentioned responsibility, and that's the better framing in my view. I agree with that. We are a collective. We live in a society. We live together. We're not, sole inhabitants of our own earths. But maybe the going forward is recognizing the value of what we achieve through unity. We're sitting in a place in that arc of history that you mentioned before, where in the challenge of climate change, and there is tremendous opportunity ahead of us to reinvent our energy systems. Yes. Energy is I don't know if it's the number one this industrial segment in our society, but it's got to be in the top two or three. And it's huge. It is a huge industry. It's very, of course, set in its ways. And that's a lot of what gets in our way, I think, of being able to move forward. We need to realize that if we can come together and find huge opportunity in putting our country in a leadership role in that transition, that will happen. There is no argument that transition will happen, right? 196 countries have signed the Paris Agreement, for crying out loud. You can't ignore that. China now basically has the solar market for the globe pretty much wrapped up. We might be able to make inroads there. There's other parts of energy systems like the high-tech grid, the network that manages the load that we put on the system from our water heaters in our houses. These are all things where we have real economic opportunity, not only from the technicians and the engineers and the designers, but from the maintainers, the right. builders. I think one of the comments from the press release was that of all the gas wells in America that are leaking propane into the atmosphere and causing great climate troubles because methane is such a huge global warming potential, so it heats up the earth faster than carbon quite substantially. All the pipe fitters that are worried about their jobs are going to be in great shape capping all of those leaks, because we need to cap those leaks. And we may also be able to put in pipelines that contain renewable hydrogen that is made from electrolysis, from overflow from the dams during the spring in our hydrocentric Northwest. That water has to spill so the dams don't overflow. And that can generate power to create hydrogen, which is a storable fuel. There are so many things we can do as we work together. And I think we need visionary folks who will help articulate that so that we can basically get away from this individual nature and get into what can we do together.
You know, the great thing that sparks for me is if more people could see that future, maybe there would be less alienation and less sense of I don't like government, I don't want to do with anything that I'm told by the government. So, that's a very hopeful perspective. Gail?
Oh, I was just going to say, I disagree so much. The Green New Deal and iterations of that around the world are so important. And this does not have to be a bad thing. This can be a great thing for all of us. To live in a world where the air is clean and the water is clean and people are treated fairly. Who doesn't want that world? I'm gonna go out there and say it. Everyone wants a world like that. People worry about loss of power and that they may be the underdog, I think, but I think the truth is that that we can move forward together for a better world. And there are a lot of great ways to do that.
This makes me think that ideas and the American sense of not just entrepreneurship, but as you said, Kevin, kind of constant innovation, constant rethinking, you know, is really our greatest natural resource, more than the sort of capitalist always focused on money in the bottom line. I laughed today because I was watching a couple of things in the news. You know, I was watching Derek Chauvin's trial about the killing of George Floyd, you know, and the sort of pushback and trying to find some balance with police training and police unions and trying to figure out, you know, how we can find that. But I was also watching the Amazon vote for unionization in Alabama, I think. And with Amazon, this just cracked me up, was saying, well, I don't know why they're complaining because they get a $15 an hour wage. And yet people are now starting to speak out and say, yeah, but I get dinged for every minute that I'm not doing my job, and I have to pee in a bottle sometimes because, you know, I can't take the time off without getting dinged with the possibility of losing my job if I take a restroom or a lunch break. And so, you know, I am encouraged by people pushing back, and I think it's important to read the news like that, that this is the people's voice. I hope the free press continues to get some support. That's one of the things Biden is planning to shore up. So I guess we just don't have to read the news like it's all bad news. It's the dialectic, you know, it's the dialogue between what corporations or what government wants and what the people want. And we've just got to let that be heard. So thanks for bringing all that out today, Kev.
You know, one thing I'll add to that, I think the research and development spending in the country, I don't remember the numbers exactly, but less than 1% of gross domestic product. I think, if I remember right, it was like 0.7% or something like that. China, I believe the number is around 2 to 2.5% of their global domestic product. And the five-year plan that China just released calls for that to go up. I've worked for the Boeing company in technology development. They had a branch that would be able to look at where patents for certain technologies had been, where the patents were from, right, on a global basis. It was shocking how many patents came out of China. So this all sounds like a global elite, right? Oh, those ivory tower technology developers off there scarfing up our money to put into research and development. But you know what? That's what creates those future jobs. That's what creates those opportunities for those coal miners who are now, I mean, the Trump said he was going to bring back coal. Coal has declined. It's because it's expensive. It's dangerous. It's dirty. People end up with respiratory problems. The climate is disturbed with that. So there are opportunities to move forward. And it doesn't, if done right, it doesn't just float the boats of the West and East Coast elites. It's done where it's equity across the country and brings us all to a better future. And so I do look forward to that. And I think that's a compelling story that people can get behind. And I think this administration has a chance to tell that story.
Thank you. Thank you. Gail, any last words? We've got about a minute and a half before we go off air, and anything burning in your mind?
Well, I just was picking up on something you'd said earlier. You know, the downside of our individualistic nature and the history of the United States, which was very much about taking and grabbing and, you know, the individual pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you know, the downside is that it can be difficult to get us to pull together in the same direction. The upside of it is that, you know, is innovation. We tend to think outside. We tend to allow that kind of outside of the box thinking, that kind of innovation that happens in all kinds of areas. So, but to think we're the only ones, I really do appreciate that, Kevin, that, you know, that's a little silly on our part. And mm-hmm. we need to be investing in those things as well, particularly mm-hmm. around climate change issues and addressing that.
Well, thank y'all. And I'm going to sign off here with that note to look for the helpers in times of trouble. Thank y'all for being part of our day and for letting us be part of yours. Take it easy, but take it.